Welcome to the second hour of At Your Service. Dave Simons filling in tonight. Certified financial planner and founder and managing partner of our new company known as One Private Wealth. Yeah, for the first time in my 30-plus year business, I'm independent along with my team. We made the big move in late August, and if you want to find out a little bit more, you can just go check out the website, my one little plug for this evening, at 1PWM.com. That's one spelled out, by the way, O-N-E-P-W-M, as in Mary. That's the acronym for Private Wealth Management, 1PWM.com. You find out a little bit more about my day job, the one that puts food on the table and pays all those electric bills and the inflation and all that. Yes, well, I got to be careful now. Don't delve too much into personal politics here, but we can't ignore it, at least the political side of things, and then into my lane of expertise on the investment side and how we might see the markets react. Now, I'm going to put aside all personal issues here when it comes to politics. That's very, very difficult for us to do, I know. And I'm just going to look at facts only. So don't get mad at me. Get mad at history. But there are four basic scenarios that you can have after an election. You can have where one party wins everything. So the Republicans winning everything would be one scenario. And of course, by everything, I mean the White House, the Senate majority, and also a majority in the House. Or the Democrats do the same. They turn the trick and they take all three branches like that. So there's your two scenarios. The other would be a mix and match, where you might have a Republican president, but the Democrats control at least one of the two chambers, if not both. But at least they have some say there. They have a majority either in the Senate or the House. Or then reverse that. The Republican wins, in this case, Trump wins, but the Democrats control at least one of the two chambers. So there's your four scenarios. If you go all the way back to 1928, when Hoover won, so we're talking about nearly a century of data, so a good sample size here. The number one scenario in terms of strictly performance of the U.S. stock market is a Democrat president, and Republicans have at least one of the two chambers. That has been historically the best performing makeup for our investments. Number two is close to that, where it is a Republican president, and then the Democrats control one of the two, if not both of them. Then you start to have a little gap in performance when you have one single party control everything. When the Democrats control, and then in last, that's third place, in last place, the worst performing markets in history have been when the Republicans control everything. Don't get mad at me. I'm just telling you. But really, it's because of two scenarios. So we have to look at, really, why? I wonder why that is. Well, you have 1929 to 32, when Hoover came in and you had the Republicans in control, and then look what happened for 4 years. Yikes. And then in the 2000s, now, George W. didn't have Republicans in control that entire time, but a big chunk of that. So during that time of the 2000s, 2000 to 08, the Republicans had a lot of control during many, if not most of those years. And we know that in the 2000s, the stock market did not perform well. In fact, the market, as measured by the S&P 500, actually performed worse in the 2000s than, believe it or not, the 1930s. And you had Republicans really controlling most of that. So you can say the Republicans are terrible, or you can just say that was bad luck timing or whatever. I'm not even going to dig into that. My point is this. If you really don't care that much and you say, pox on both houses, they're all corrupt, I don't care, it doesn't matter, I just want my 401k to go up. Okay. If that's you, hypothetically speaking, then you would want a Democrat president and the Republicans to have some say in Congress. But a close second is the other way. So you say, okay, Trump wins. At least we want the Democrats to control something. I also am a fan of that, even though I am ensconced on one side politically, and I won't even bore you with my personal details. You don't care. But obviously, I am very passionate personally in my own little corner of the world politically. However, with that said, I'm not an ideologue. And I'm not out on the extreme measures of this. I like a little sharing. I don't mind having an open mind to say, well, I really feel strongly about this, but I want to hear what you have to say. All right. I'm not challenging you. Hey, you try to convince me. No, I just want to know why you feel that way, because I really don't agree with that. And I might find out that it's just because of your own personal experiences, you've been colored that way in terms of how you were raised, where you were raised. Did you come from money? Did you not come from money? Where in the country did you come from? What did your parents believe? That can get into your hard drive within that brain of yours that could have some impact on you, at least in your younger days. All of these things, or your work experience. Where do you work? What is your choice of your career? That can also color you politically. So all of these things, I just want to hear about it. It's like, okay, we're going to agree to disagree on this. I feel very passionately about this. I think that's a little bit of a lost art, or is it? I don't know. Or is it just the extremes? When I come back, I'm going to give you some numbers that are just going to blow you away, but it is going to cement the point that I'm trying to articulate here. And that is, it doesn't really matter if it is a Republican or a Democrat who wins next Tuesday. In the long scheme of things, in terms strictly, hear me out now. I'm not talking about all of these other things in our culture, all these other things that are the hot button issues, whether it's immigration, inflation, pro-choice, pro-life. No, I'm out of my lane of expertise there. I'm talking strictly on the financial side and the investment side and how your money may or may not grow. When it comes to that and what Wall Street cares about, they just want to know, where can I make money? Whoever's in charge. And I've got some numbers that are really going to point this out to you in terms of, it doesn't matter in the long run if it is someone who is red or someone who is tinted by blue. You see the colors of both parties, of course, who sits in the White House. I had to actually, when I saw these numbers, go and do the calculations myself, because even I, when I first looked at, thought, is that right? And it is. So stay with us. We're going to come back and dig into this a little bit deeper here on my personal opinion on how I think the markets could react after next week. And we will use some real historical data to, I think, really surprise a lot of you and point out the fact it doesn't really matter. Stay with us. Welcome back, everybody. It's 9:20 in St. Louis. Dave Simons with you tonight on At Your Service. Hello there. Got your Halloween candy? I just love this time of year. I do. I don't like winter, so I wish we could just go right from the fall right into the spring. Although it certainly doesn't feel like fall out there, does it? But I remember the first time I went trick-or-treating. I know my mom was listening in the first hour. I don't know if she's still listening, but she's probably wincing right now. So we had just moved into our new house. I don't remember what year this was. I was a kid, so this is the 1960s. And I still remember, we didn't live there very long. It was on Teakwood Manor, which is a small little street up in Florissant. I went to Lusher Elementary up there. But it was it rained that night. Now, for those of you who are a little bit younger, you will probably not appreciate this, but back then, parents didn't worry as much about their kids just going out on their own, even at night in your neighborhood. We were brand new in this neighborhood. We hadn't even unpacked the boxes yet. And my parents said, okay, here's your brown paper bag. That's what it was. It was a lunch bag, brown paper bag. And off I went by myself, because I didn't have any friends yet in the new neighborhood, just walking out in the dark off into the neighborhood knocking on doors to get my candy. You didn't fear stuff like that back then. Well, it started raining and raining and raining, and a brown paper bag doesn't hold up very well. It basically disintegrated in my hands. All the candy started falling as I was running back to my house. I don't remember this, but my mom tells me I was crying. Yeah, probably. And so my first experience in Halloween was apparently a very poor one. Maybe I need to go seek counseling. Maybe all of the problems that I have in life all started with that one horrific experience up there in that neighborhood around Lusher Elementary School. I don't know. Maybe that's one reason I love Halloween so much, is because I tried to make up for it. And I have a sweet tooth the size of Greenland. I mean, anything. Somebody says, do you like this kind of candy or that kind of candy? And my answer always is yes. There's just not a chocolate bar I don't like. There's not candy. I walk into the KMOX studios earlier tonight, and there's a big old bag of candy corn. Do you think I'm going to walk past that? And I know a lot of you just think that that's a gross candy. There's no such thing in my book. If candy corn, if that bag is open, and it was, I've already had two handfuls of it. So, yeah, I tend to overbuy for Halloween, even when I had little kids in the house, because I wanted to make sure that Daddy still had some that would last for a while. And that's my Halloween story. All right, back to the task at hand. So I know, because I've heard from some people, friends of mine, when I tell them, hey, you know, history says it really doesn't matter. And I always point back again, like I said, when I was talking to David Rolfe in the first hour, there were some on the left who said, many on the left, in fact, who said, if that Donald Trump guy wins here in 16, expect the market to crash. The liberal economist Paul Krugman of the New York Times even said, we're going to go into a deep recession. The market will crash, all that. And he was wrong. The market pretty much took off. I'll never forget that night, too. And I think many of you as well, even if you were a Trump supporter, maybe you were surprised that he actually won. That was kind of the feeling I got at the time. And certainly watching it that night going, whoa. Now, as it started to become clear that Hillary Clinton, all the polls were saying she was going to win, when that turned out, uh-oh, that may not be the case, and Trump was starting to rack up the electoral votes, the futures of the stock market, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, indeed really started to fall off drastically. And at one point, the futures for the next day showed the Dow was going to open down more than 1,000 points. And the Dow, I think at the time, was only around 15 or 16,000 at the time. So on a percentage basis, that was a very precipitous drop we were looking at the next morning. And I'm texting my longtime business partner, Tom Cordes, and we're texting back and forth going, oh my gosh, this could be in for a rough day tomorrow. And then as it became clear and clear that this upset was going to occur and Donald Trump really was going to win this thing, the market turned. And it was almost like Wall Street thought, well, this is actually going to be good for business. He's a business guy. And it made up all of those 1,000 points and then some. So when the market actually opened that next Wednesday, it opened slightly higher. And then the market did very well, of course, in 2017, a little flat in 18, and then came roaring back in 19, and then the pandemic hit. Nobody was going to have returns when that thing hit. So people were wrong. Well, the same thing happened in 2020. Those on the right said, if that liberal Biden, I want out of the market, man. This is going to be terrible. And yet the market did very well in 21, his first full year. We did have our first bear market in 22, if you don't count the little short pandemic thing there, and then came roaring back. And we've had a really strong 2 years, two of the best years we've had back to back since the late 90s. So it really hasn't mattered. And if you invest from a political standpoint, you will be disappointed. You will leave money on the table, or you will actually lose. And here's some stats to prove that. So this comes from Zacks Investments, and I think they do great work. So they went back to 1943, and the reason they did that is because of the election year in 42. That was at the low. When the market crashed in 29, it went straight down until 32, and the Dow lost about 89%. And then it did really well. For about a five-year period from 32 to 37, it more than tripled, almost quadrupled. People forget that or they don't know that. But it did. And then it took another dive again, starting in 37, and went straight down about 41 or 42. We got involved in the war. The market started to rebound. So Zach says, okay, let's take a look at the, kind of the market low right there at the beginning of the World War II. And the Dow was barely above 100. I said that right. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, which today closed at 42,483. 42,500. Back in the early 40s was at 100, as in 100. So they said, what if you took $10,000, which would have been a practical fortune in the early 40s, but you had $10,000 and you just invested in the market, the broader market, the S&P 500, basically. Which, by the way, yes, I know, for all of you people who want to get technical, the S&P 500 was not actually invented to the 1950s, but you can back test it. And that's what we're doing here. So $10,000 into the S&P 500 at the beginning of 43. At the end of 23, so we're talking about 80 years here now, that $10,000, if it was only invested during Republican presidencies, that's it. Only when a Republican was president, your $10,000 at the end of 23 would have been worth $311,766. $10,000 into $311,000. Not 80 years, by the way. Just in the years where the Republican was a president. When a Democrat was president, you pull the money aside. You didn't even put it into CDs. It was just put under a mattress. That's it. You only brought it back out when a Republican was in the White House. Now, what about a Democrat only? Democrat in the White House. That $10,000 today would be worth $1,212,746. So, yes, nearly four times as much. Now, again, don't shoot the messenger. These are just the facts, and there are a lot of things that go into it. So I know a lot of the Democrats are cheering. Hold on. There are other stories behind it. Who was actually in control of Congress and who was writing the budgetary bills and all that. Other extenuating factors. If you're a Republican out there, don't get all upset. Because, again, there are other factors. I'm just giving you the stats to say $10,000 only when a Republican was president would be worth $311,000 today, starting in 1943. $10,000 for a Democrat only, $1.2 million. But here is what, get ready for this. This is an actual real number. This is a fact. If you didn't care and you just simply kept your money invested the whole time and never pulled it out, so we're talking 80 years. So, yeah, you started when you were practically born. So we're getting a little silly with this exercise, but it proves a point. That $10,000 at the end of 23, 80 years later, would be worth $37,809,000 and change. Now, some of you, I think, would hear that and go, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. $10,000 only turns into $311,000 when Republicans are president. That's right. $10,000 turns into $1.2 million when only Democrats are president. That's right. But you're saying, Dave, that if you just stayed invested the whole time, it's not just a few million, it's $37 million. I don't know how the numbers work that way. It's called the law of large numbers, and I've talked about it on this very show before. I've written about it in my weekly commentary. Think about it this way. $5,000 turning into $10,000 is the same as $20 million turning into $40 million. On a percentage basis, it's the same. But it's the numbers that explode. For those of you who have invested your whole life in your retirement, you know what I'm talking about. You might have started in your 20s with a couple of nickels put together. You made a little bit more in the 30s. You tried to do well. You were investing. You were putting money on the side. You didn't really start to notice that money was growing in your bank account or in your investments until probably you were in your 50s. And then it just seemed to like grow like weeds into your 60s. The percentage returns were the same, but the dollar amount just seemed to explode. It's very back-end loaded. That's why a lot of younger people get frustrated because they see people who are older than them with all this money and they think, I'll never get there. Yeah, you will. Yeah, you will. Your parents didn't start with much either. Your grandparents certainly didn't. But they kept at it. They kept at it. They kept investing. And that's what this shows. $10,000 invested in the market 80 years ago, if you never pulled it out, would be worth nearly $38 million. If you just kept it in through Democrats and Republicans alike. Now, yes, a little bit of a silly exercise because who's investing for 80 years out there? But don't miss the point. So you invest for 30 years or 40 years and you capture a small part of that. In your own little corner of the world, you will still see the law of large numbers work its magic, but it's back end loaded. For those of you who have experienced that and you're of a certain age and you're nodding your head in agreement, make sure your kids and grandkids understand that. Make sure they're staying with it to invest long term and make sure they're not pulling money out based on some kind of political ideology, which will always come back and hurt their chances to meet their long term goals. It's always hurt in the past, and I'm telling you, it's going to hurt again if you try to pull that after next Tuesday. We'll be right back. At your service here tonight, as in most weeknights, it is 9:38. Dave Simons sitting in tonight and loving every minute of it. One of the places that I go on the web a lot these days, right up until the election, is this website called Race to the White House. Although it's not spelled out, it's racetothewh.com. And they started, I think, around 2010. So it's a somewhat newer site, but they do all of these simulations. It's almost like AI or something to predict House races, Senate races, the White House. And in their brief time in doing this, their track record is actually pretty good. In their last one, in the midterm election in 22, their forecast called 96.3% of the House races correctly. Now, I know many of them are no-brainers. Some of them don't even have an opponent. I get that. But there are some that are really tight. And what they do is every day, believe it or not, every day, this site runs 20,000 simulations of the election. 20,000 based on all of this data. I'm not even sure half the stuff that they put in there. Also in 22, I think this was in 22, they predicted the total number of seats that the GOP would win in 22, and they were only off by one. They said in the House that the Republicans would win 223 seats. They ended up winning 222. The reason I point that out is to kind of give them the bona fides, to give them some street cred here for what I'm about to tell you, because this plays into what I have been saying is that if you really got outside of your personal politics and said, look, what is actually the best for the country and for my own investing? I don't mean to sound that in a selfish way, but typically if my investments have done well, it means America has probably done well too. So I'm okay with that. And as I've said, it is a mixture of both parties. Wall Street and both stock and bond markets don't typically do well when one party controls everything. We've already gone through that. So I've been interested to see that this site, this Race to the White House site, the gap in what they're predicting for both the Senate and the House is starting to widen. I'm a big trend follower. I never take a number in isolation and say, oh, look at this number right here. What does that mean? No, I want to know what that same number was last week or last month. And what it was the month before and a year ago, and what are the trends? That is more important. So the trend here has been favoring the Democrats in the House and the Republicans in the Senate. Again, not getting into the personal politics, but that's actually good. Or maybe it could be the other way around. I'll let the rest of you argue about that from a pure political standpoint. I'm just saying that no matter who wins the White House, it doesn't look like you're going to have a full sweep. Now, I've not seen any polling that said the Democrats have a chance to win everything. I've not seen anything that comes remotely close to that. I've seen a few that show there is a slight chance the Republicans could control everything, but it's looking more and more like you could see a split. So this website right now has Democrats with a 69.7% chance of having a majority in the House. That's pretty big. And that trend has been actually widening. So 70 to 30, basically, for Democrats to Republican. I'm doing this kind of on the fly on the site right now. I actually have not looked at their Senate forecast for today, so I'm doing this live. It has been favoring the Republicans at about close to 60-40, and it still is. Okay, chance to win a Senate majority, according to this site, which has been pretty darn good since they've been doing this for 14 years. They put the chances of the Republicans having a majority in the Senate at 62.2%. Obviously, that means 37.9 for the Democrats. So we'll see if that plays out once again. But if those of you who agree with me and say it would be better for the country if we had a little mixture and not one party controlling everything, then that is somewhat encouraging. But I get back to this. Let's not overstate the importance of this to your investments. There is no history, even in some of the most vitriolic times that we've had in our society, and you go back to the 60s, like 68 in particular. When I was a kid back then, so I can't say that I know with any personal experience how bad it is, only from what I have read and all the study I've done, but many of you listening right now were adults back then, and you know exactly how it was back then, and many of you would say actually it was worse in terms of it feeling like the country was actually ending right before our eyes. And yet, the market actually did pretty well after that up until the 73-74 bear market. The market was hitting back to all-time highs in the early 70s. So, let me tell you one more thing here. It's a phrase that many of you have heard when it comes to investing. Sell in May and go away. Historically, for about 75-80 years, the majority of the time that's played out. In other words, if you wanted to make the biggest returns on your investments, you make sure that you are invested basically from November to April. Historically, that is where the vast majority of annual gains come from. May to October, not so much. You have some of your biggest declines, in fact, and biggest crashes even, have occurred in October. Well, guess what? There's a reason why we say no guarantee of future results, because this year in 2024, that did not play out, as we know. Sell in May and go away? Ooh, you've cost yourself a lot of money if you had pulled out and followed that, that long mantra that a lot of investors do use, and I think to their detriment, I still believe that you can make changes along the way, but you just never completely pull out. And this year, it would have hurt those people. Now, a little bit of history before the final break here. What has happened historically when that mantra of sell in May and go away has not worked? In other words, what has happened when the market has actually done really well and in fact is up double digits from May through October? Well, according to Sam Stovall at CFRA, he looked at this and he went back to 1945. In other words, since the end of World War II, and he noticed 12 times. That's not very many if you think about it. Since 1945, we're talking almost about 80 years or so here. Only 12 times has the S&P 500 had at least a 10% gain in that May to October period. Well, we just did it for the 13th time. What happened in those previous 12 times? Oh, I don't know. The market was up the next 6 months, 11 of the 12 times, with an average gain of 13%. Now, let me give the disclaimer here. As we know, that doesn't guarantee us a hill of beans for the next 6 months. But when something has a track record of 11 out of 12 times, I think we should pay attention to that. And I've always said that gains beget gains. And it's true. Once that bull market gets going, just because it's been strong, just because it's been going on a couple of years, doesn't automatically mean, well, it has to end today. Of course it's going to end at some point, but there has to be a catalyst. What's the catalyst? Earnings are going to be bad? No, actually, earnings are still beating expectations. And analysts are expecting a pretty good, robust earnings picture in 2025. Okay, got that covered. The elections are going to cause something and America is ending. I think I've done a pretty good job the last hour and 45 minutes talking about the fact that America is going to survive just fine. And the elections won't have quite the negative impact on your money as you fear. It gets back then to what David Rolfe, my guest, said in the first hour. And it really gets back to where it always gets back. And that is the Fed. We don't know what the Fed's going to do. Let's hope that they don't blow this thing and get too aggressive and bring rates too far down. Everyone loves low interest rates. But let's be honest, consumer confidence, if you saw, the numbers were very, very good. Even with inflation still causing problems for so many Americans right now. We want rates lower. We want inflation lower. But yet we've seen inflation come down even while keeping rates sort of where they are, even with just one rate cut of a half of a percentage point. My fear is also the same as David Rolfe's fear, my guest in the first hour, who worries that maybe the Fed will cut too much. That will spur inflation just as either a Donald Trump or a Kamala Harris somehow manages to get most of their proposals in, which every economist on both sides say could be inflationary. So we're adding inflation as the Fed's cutting rates next year. It could get a little dicey here. So I make no predictions. But if you knew, if you had the crystal ball to see what the Fed was going to do, you'd probably do very well predicting this thing. We'll be back to close out tonight's At Your Service right after this. Hello again, everybody. Dave Simon's about to sign off, and it's been a real treat. Always fun to come down here. It seems like it's usually a Tuesday when I do fill in. Don't have any idea when the next time I'll be on, but I'll let all the subscribers know to my long-running weekly commentary I write. So I, in fact, was even working on that today, sitting at an airport in Savannah, Georgia, earlier this morning, kind of putting together my thoughts on things heading into the election. And every week I've got something different related to finance and investing. And I never give out specifics like, oh, you should buy the XYZ stock because I've done all my research and here's why. No, I take more of a 30,000 foot view and hopefully bring a different angle to it a little bit, where maybe you don't see it elsewhere that might get you to think about certain things, and even throw in some humor now and then. So if you would like to subscribe and are not on the list, I've only been writing it for 25 years, you can just email me at dave@1pwm.com. Now, I don't see it. You're put on a blind carbon copy. Nobody's trying to sell you anything. You're never spammed. That's been the 25-year promise. You take this information that I write every week and do with it what you will. That's it. So again, it's Dave, D-A-V-E, at one, spelled out O-N-E, P-W-M, as in Mary.com. You don't have to write anything in the body of the text, just in the subject line. You can just put, sign me up for the commentary, and you will get the very next one this Friday. And like I said, I always put in there when I'm going to make my next appearance here on Camo X. Okay, I'm going to leave you with one more little market item, and I find this fascinating because I'm a nerd, a little bit of a numbers geek. It's all about supply and demand. Now, think about this. You have 1,000 widgets that you want to sell. And you have 1,000 people who want to buy your widget based on a price that you have set, whatever the price is. But what if you wake up one day and you realize 1,000 people still want your widgets, but you now only have 50 of them? Whoa. Well, you're going to make the same amount of money, but that means that all of a sudden those widgets cost a lot more, right? You now have 1,000 people fighting over just 50 widgets instead of 1,000 people fighting over 1,000. You know how this works. It's very simple. Supply and demand, Econ 101. You know, the same thing is played out over these many decades in the stock market, to wit. There's an index that doesn't get a lot of play, but it's simply called the Wilshire 5000 Total Market Index. And when it started 50 years ago, back in 1974, it had about 4,700 publicly traded stocks in there. With the idea, when they put this thing together, they figured it'll be 5,000, it's close enough. And you know, it has a nice little ring, the Wilshire 5000. And sure enough, it did take off. At its peak in 1998, the Wilshire 5000 would eventually have 7,378 stocks. That was March of 98. Today, there are publicly traded stocks in the Wilshire 5000. We are all the way down to, I just had this in front of me. Let me put my glasses on, my folks. We have barely more than 3,000. You heard that right. It's been cut in less than half at the high in 1998. That supply and demand, it doesn't get talked about a lot, but just the fact that there's more money in the stock market than ever and fewer stocks is another reason that has pushed valuations higher and the market can keep going up. Supply and demand, folks. Have a great Halloween. We'll talk to you next time.